We're probably live and direct.
Go unmuted on the Discord so that people can hear us. Got anyone that ends up BTC hanging out with us, waiting patiently, which we appreciate.
Yes, he is. Oh, I should unmute in the Discord.
So, at right after last week, Short Segments posted like 17 questions in the Discord chat. And one of those, the first one is, when is the next AMA? Where is the schedule for it? And so schedule is a strong word for it. You know, I would say it's a
schedule-ish.
It's loosely, reserved, Tuesdays, most of the time, 11 a.m. Eastern U.S.-ish.
Ish.
It's 12. We went live at 12:05. It's Tuesday morning in the U.S., sort of. that's the real answer.
We'll call it Tuesday brunch.
Tuesday brunch. I like it.
Because brunch could be 11. It could be noon. It could even be 1.
Yeah. Hey, as long as there's mimosas, then you're good.
I think the issue is people forget that this, just like everything else, is on the calendar.
Right.
And if it's on the calendar, that means there's a time range.
A good range in there, yeah.
Yes, there's a range.
You got to give understand. Everything on the calendar a wide berth.
Yes. Everyone's waiting for the girth and price of all coins Leo related.
Yes.
The Leoverse. Yes.
Yeah, I'm still stacking my Leo miners.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Oh, yeah, keep talking about buying some.
Up to 11,000, I think.
Jesus Christmas. Pretty soon you're going to have more miners than I have Leo tokens. I hit my milestone finally last week. Oh, yeah, that's right, you helped me. You gave me a little push. So I got the 50K Leo power, and then I've been letting the rest just stack. I gotta figure out what I'm gonna do with that. I might power it up and
well 50k you're too high, but Leo power update was last week, and I powered I don't know, 1,000 or something like that, and I actually got one of the community awards for delegation.
Wow.
I got
which one did you win
from from Steam Streams? I got that one.
Are you serious? Wait, so you won one of the power up? Meanwhile, I'm getting hit up to see if I want to participate in terms of, giving out delegations, and freaking Neil's getting delegations. Meanwhile, this is so ass backwards. Look at, see, I got him laughing so hard, he's spitting water up. I'm doing something wrong in life.
That's funny.
Oh my god. Where's I need a clip of The Simpsons or Family Guy with just someone shaking fist. In fact, hold on. I'm sure there's a shaking
fist. Good thing I have a top filter so I didn't spit water all over my microphone.
Right. Oh my, actually, wait, hold on. I got the perfect gift. It's shaking fist and Neil with his water. If you're not in the AMA chat, you're missing out.
You are missing out.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe you got a delegation.
I couldn't believe it either. But I'm in the qualifications. I had between 200 and 20,000. I powered up. Fair's fair.
Clearly, Neil doesn't have enough Leah. So
exactly.
I know, right? What is this? Neil gets all this love and there's no loyalty. The cat's the one. Bag holding Leo and Cub and Poly Cub.
Well, no, I mean, there's plenty of loyalty. That Leo that I used to have went into Cub.
I did actually. I'd have way more Leo if not for the same reason. Yeah, I put when Poly Cub was launching, I converted, I think, at least 25, if not like 30,000 Leo into P Leo. At least it felt like that much. I got to look back. I don't even know what happened in that pool anymore. I know I pulled some out at one point and flipped it into another pool.
Yeah, that's all in the ecosystem.
All in the ecosystem.
Speaking of the ecosystem. So we had Leo Power Up Day. This is going to be my quick weekly roundup. We had Leo Power Up Day. I think there was like 100, I posted in chat, 174,000 Leo was powered up on Power Up Day, which is about a little over 4% of the liquid supply of Leo out there. So it's very solid. Yeah, a lot of Leo got bought and powered up, and it got powered up by, I think it said in that post, let's see, a couple hundred unique accounts, which is awesome. So I think like one of the key things about Power Up Day to look at is the spread of Leo that's powered up. So 320 unique accounts powered up, a total of 174,000 Leo. So that's really solid. The goal of Power Up Day, and it was started by a Nomad Soul who's head of business development. So he's doing all sorts of stuff like the ambassador program, the obviously Power Up Day. He's working on some community pages, marketing, all sorts of stuff. He does all the DeFi listings for Polycub and Cub. He recently got like the token logos added to the like Etherscan trackers, which is actually pretty difficult. They just have like a lot of requirements. So he's been doing all this stuff and he's doing a great job. So with Power Up Day, it was kind of funny. This was like one of the first like massive community initiatives where I did absolutely nothing. I barely even knew the requirements for the contest. So
that's what's up.
And I didn't even know that Neil won. So that it goes to show you that that the whole Leoverse is spreading out, and a lot of the responsibilities that used to just be on me are being spread to other people on the team, which is awesome. It kind of frees me up to focus on development a little bit more. Yeah, I was excited to see Leo Power Up Day be really successful, because it's really the first time there was like a hands-off for me initiative that was widespread. And I think it did even better than if I had my hands on it. So he did an awesome job. So everyone should clap it up for him.
Yes. Round of applause.
So the thing that got me excited was the unique accounts. So 320 unique accounts. Hopefully we can get over 400 next month. And I think it'll just kind of grow over time, because it's kind of one of those things where it was the first one, people didn't necessarily know about it. And then, you know, people will find out about it as we keep doing it every month. So every 15th, and that this one's not on the calendar because it's not my responsibility. So every 15th, it's not the 16th. It's not the 14th. The actual 15th on the calendar with a C-A-L. So every month, keep an eye out for that. And then Leo Mobile is officially live Google Play Store. So if you haven't downloaded V1, then go download it if you have an Android. iOS, we're still waiting. I think we're going to probably be waiting for a little while. So I'll keep everyone posted on that. iOS is notoriously slow. We also released
the test version that works just fine.
Yeah, so it's on test flight. I'm an Apple user, so I use the app on test flight, and it works great. It's actually V1, but it's just not listed in the full App Store. So if you have an Apple device, then go download the app in test flight, and you'll get all the same features as Android users.
Android for the win. It's been working.
The one thing that's nice about Android is that they're very quick with the Google Play Store. I think we submitted V1 to the Google Play Store, and it was approved within like 3 or 4 hours, which is crazy. And Apple is usually about like 3 to 4 weeks, sometimes even months. It's pretty crazy how fast Google Play does it. And then for the community pages, like I said, a Nomad Soul is working on a bunch of stuff with the ambassadors and the ambassador program. And basically they're creating a bunch of pages. So he just sent me a bunch of them, and we're going to start adding them. There's going to be a page for BNB chain, so Binance Smart Chain, Avalanche, Polygon, Ethereum, Phantom. So the kind of next rollout of community pages is going to be based on these like blockchain ecosystems. And then there's a specific ambassador from like the Leo ambassador program who's in charge of each page and kind of filling it with content and curating content. So that'll be kind of like a nice showcase of what a community page could be. And then obviously we're going to start rolling out more community pages for these smaller communities out there on Twitter. So JK6276 reached out to me and said we should launch a community page for Comdex, which is a pretty small community. It's kind of like a newer project. And he's in touch with people that are actually on their team. So that's kind of like a cool use case for community pages that I had envisioned from the beginning, which is getting these smaller communities, these more niche communities like Comdex, ThorChain, and stuff like that. And then creating community pages and getting the actual team from those communities involved. I think you can onboard a lot of users that way.
So we already have a Hive community or no?
No, it's a Comdex is a, it's like a Cosmos. I think it's like a Cosmos DeFi platform. I actually don't know a ton about it. They have like node validators and all sorts of stuff. So one of their node validators is called Carbon Zero Zone, I think. And they're posting updates on Leo now. So they have a new account.
So those are new people to Leo.
Hive, which is good. Fresh blood. That's really the whole vision behind community pages. And I think it's kind of slowly getting fulfilled as we add those pages. Obviously we've only got three right now. And that kind of leads us into some of like the site issues that we've had recently. There's been a lot of like instability on Leo Finance. So, you know, occasionally you'll see it go down. Some of that was related to Hive stuff. So actually like PeakD and Hive.blog and other UIs were down for a while. So that kind of took us down. But then in the middle of that, we've also been dealing with the new Lightning rollout, and that's been super unstable. So having both of those things kind of created this crazy environment. But as of yesterday, we deployed a pretty big bug patch, and I haven't seen any downtime since then, outside of Hive Notes having an issue this morning. So on our end, we're all good, and it looks like we're on a pretty stable version right now. But my public service announcement is that, and I said this last week too, if you have any site issues, any issues with Leo Finance, Polycup, Cub, anything, please open a bug report ticket and just include screenshots, details. If you're well versed in the internet, then open your console logs and paste them into the bug report channel. And if you do that stuff, it really helps us index all the issues and then fix them really quickly. So if anyone's been opening bug report tickets, you've probably noticed that you open a bug report ticket and then the bug is fixed pretty quickly, usually in less than 24 hours. So it's very helpful when you open bug report tickets. But I do see some people like say that some things aren't working. They'll say it on leofinance.io. They'll say it, you know, in Discord general chat. And that's good too, just to bring it to our attention. But the bug reports are really how we organize the fixes. So definitely an important thing to do. And then my last bullet point to talk about is that the Polycup docs have been, well, I posted in general, the Polycup docs have been completely updated. So there's a bunch of new stuff in there, kind of like this updated mission statement for Polycup, which is, you know, kind of always been the mission from the beginning. But I think this is kind of like a nice, concise way to put it. And especially in this bear market environment, I think a lot of people are looking for what Polycup is aiming to achieve. And that's to generate a safe, reliable, and growing yield for everyone that uses the platform. So, you know, especially in this bear market, I feel like everyone's looking for an opportunity to earn something. And, you know, in terms of dollar terms, most people, you know, in the bull market, everyone's like, oh, I want to get, you know, 1,000% APR. And they'll just jump from platform to platform that's offering that. In this type of market, and I think kind of going into the next cycle, what people are going to be looking for are those more secure and sustainable platforms, especially post the Terra collapse. People are definitely looking towards sustainability and things that can actually, you know, be secure and generate yield in long time frames. And that's always been the goal of Polycub and Cub, is to generate that safe and reliable kind of income stream for anyone who uses it. So if you read those docs, you'll see that a lot of the language in there has changed and kind of been more focused on that mission. And then there was a Vex Polycub section added with kind of some overview of what we're doing with that. And then you can see the governance UI in there now, which obviously is not live on the UI yet. It will be in the Sooniverse though. And that governance UI will let you vote on the yield governance, obviously, and kind of vote for which vaults you think deserve the most yield. So this governance utility has, ever since we launched X Polycup governance, you could see that the Polycup price has become a lot more sustainable and a lot more, it's actually gone up. And in this market environment, it's outperformed every other crypto, including Bitcoin. And not even by a little, by a pretty large margin. So it's been interesting. I've been posting on Twitter and kind of following what's been going on with Polycub versus the rest of the market, and it's pretty cool to watch.
All good.
When you say, is it Vex Polycub, like VEX?
Yeah, it stands for Voting Escrow X Polycub, which is a mouthful. Gotcha.
I just want to make sure I'm typing up, when soon recap post, which I refrained from putting Neil in the PUD section about getting a delegation. I left it out.
It's too painful. It's too painful. Soon.
I just dropped the link. You can find the winners at the recap post of the LPUD event. But all right, cool. And then as far as the bug, the bugs with the desktop, that's been since when? Since the Lightning update? Is that what kind of was the catalyst?
Yeah, the Lightning update is what kind of was the catalyst for that. We basically, with the new community pages feature, we released an entirely new version of Lightning. It was like the next step for Lightning, which included a lot of performance updates, but also included the framework for community pages, because on the front end, it looks pretty simple, but on the back end, those community pages have their own unique feeds and their own sorting algorithms that are based on the curators in each community. So in order to create community pages, we had to essentially add this entire framework to Lightning, which could create, basically what we did is create customizable feeds where you can add curators and remove them. And that wasn't easy, obviously. And then by updating Lightning, we also went forward with the Leo Mobile integration of Lightning. So how it looked before community pages is that we were building Lightning for desktop, and we kind of had it already built, several months ago. And then we started building Lightning for Leo Mobile at the same time. And they were two separate servers, two separate instances of Lightning. And essentially, what we did during the community pages development is we started merging. So I've talked a little bit before about Leo Merge, but this is kind of moving forward with Leo Merge. And we actually merged Lightning for Leo Finance Desktop and Leo Mobile. So now there's only one instance of Lightning, and it runs on both. So really a lot of the instability came from this merging event. And also the addition of community pages, but we kind of did all this stuff at the same time. And our motto is live beta. We're doing it live. And that there's my belief in startups and technology and development is that, when you're this small, you're also very nimble, and we can break a lot of stuff and then fix it quickly. We could have built community pages, and we could have done the Lightning merge in two separate developments, and it would have taken 2 months longer. Or we could break a bunch of shit and do it really fast and do it all at once. And
break stuff.
I love breaking stuff. It lets you push forward a lot faster. With Leo Finance still being as small as it is, I think this is our time to be breaking a lot of stuff and building quickly. our technology has really, you know, I've been wanting to do a really good post at some point about how our technology has pushed forward, you know, comparing our technology today to, you know, even like 6 months or 12 months ago. You know, between Leo Infra, Lightning, Leo Desktop and Leo Mobile, and then obviously all the DeFi stuff we're doing too, our technology is like a totally different ball game than what it used to be. You know, things used to just kind of be hobbled together, and now obviously we have a much bigger team, so we have multiple people working on things, and now it has to be a lot more organized than it used to. And obviously we're also working on scaling, so we're always looking at, you know, if we have 100 users today but 10,000 users tomorrow, how can Leo Infra scale, how can Lightning scale? So this is a lot of the stuff that we're already thinking about. And over the weekend, I had a conversation with a couple people in Discord general chat, and we were talking about the scalability of Hive and comments, because we've got one of the next features for Leo Desktop is called Threads, and it's essentially it's a miniaturized version of Project Blank. It's basically a way that I can test Lightning, and you know, the goal of it is to test the scalability of Lightning and Leo Infra. And Threads will basically give all the features of Project Blank to Leo Finance. You'll be able to create, you'll essentially be able to create tweets on Leo Finance. So those short form micro blogs, and there's gonna be a whole UI framework for it built into Leo Desktop and then also Leo Mobile. And the goal there is both to add a really cool feature to Leo Finance and to test our framework for Project Blank, which will be the kind of full release of you know, Leo Infra, Lightning, and all that infrastructure technology that we've been working on for, I don't even know how long, probably like 18 months we've been building this stuff. And you know, this will be like a nice live stress test of all that stuff.
Looking forward to it.
I think Threads is a killer feature for Leo Finance. It will give micro blog. I mean, like, you will literally probably in the next 2 months or less, you'll be micro blogging on Leo Finance. You'll be able to, you know, Neil will be able to post a mixed spreadsheet and say, you know, Leo's going to $600 in a micro blog, and you know, people will be able to upvote it. People will be able to reply to it, and it's not a top level Hive post. So it's you know, it's really the first iteration of real microblogging on Hive, and I'm excited about it.
Now, I do want to point out that these are comments, right, in the Hive structure, right?
So there's two ideas for Project Blank and kind of this whole system that we're building. One is to use comments, and the other is to use custom JSONs. Yeah. And I've been leaning towards this comment idea kind of recently. So Threads will essentially stress test the idea of using comments instead of custom JSONs.
Okay, I just want to point out that there are Hive whales who, if they see a comment with, you know, $15 of upvotes, will downvote it. Affect your Leo rewards at all, but it'll affect your Hive rewards. So for anybody who is using Threads in the future, just don't be surprised if that happens.
Yeah, well, Sam, here's the cool thing. Definitely going to happen. But obviously it doesn't impact your Leo rewards.
Right.
So that's number one. Number two is, you know, with the whole Threads thing, people will be making Threads. I mean, you could make a thousand of them a day, and it's not going to have any impact on you, in terms of, you know, in terms of like you can, if you made more than three posts on Hive a day, I think you would start getting downvoted by the Hive elite.
I have seen that. People think four is a magic number for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just want users to be aware that that is a thing. Ready to blow through some questions? We've got a whole bunch here queued up.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I'm going to try to organize these. PSPS Bridge. Does MetaMask need to be on Binance, Polygon? Does it not matter?
Question. No, so Well, the way that any EVM chain works is that if you have an address on like Ethereum, that same address is your address on Polygon. You just have to switch networks.
Right, but
and that goes for any.
Right, but if you're sending from Polygon to Hive Engine, you need it on Polygon because it's a Polygon transaction.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's PSPS, so it's Polygon SPS. So if you're going to be, you know, sending yourself, if you're bridging SPS to Polygon, obviously you need to have your wallet accessible on Polygon.
Right.
And whether that's MetaMask, it could also be Trust Wallet or any other EVM wallet.
Right. And then related question, the SPS that is bridged between Polygon and Hive, that's SPS on Hive Engine and not in your Splinterlands wallet.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a little different than the way that SPS has their own bridges, which is for that native SPS.
Right. And then you're saying that the PSPS Polycub farm is over 100%, and you're welcome because I made it that way. twice the rate of staking SPS in the game. Is there a marketing plan or team to get that word out into the Splinterlands player base?
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing is that we're all local to Hive. So really anyone who makes a post about it is kind of reaching that Splinterlands user base. But it's crazy that there's only 39,000 in liquidity there. I think it could be a lot higher.
Well, it was higher. And then I had to take some out to raise the APR.
Yeah, so.
Because I lost the governance vote.
Yeah, I mean, what's the on in-game staking rate, like 40%?
It's 45-ish right now.
Okay, so 45% versus right now it's 77% on Polycub. So 40, he's my free BTC said 42% in game.
Yeah,
so it's almost double on Polycub. But yeah, I mean, it's everything's game theory, right? Offer an attractive enough staking rate and people should flow into it.
Pancake Swap, are they creating a new version? Is that true?
I actually don't know.
Talk about Pancake V3. So I know they did V2.
And yeah, I think
some of the cub farms need to be migrated, right? Did that ever happen?
Yeah, I think we already migrated to V2. I don't see anything about a V3 pancake swap, but I think he might be confusing that with Uniswap V3, which is about to go live, I think. Or maybe it is already live, I'm not sure.
I think Uniswap V3 is already live. But are there Polycub changes that you will not implement on Cub Finance?
Potentially. Things like the harvesting window, I think, is probably not going to get migrated to Cub.
I totally screwed that up this morning.
Oh, yeah. I saw your message in general.
Yeah. But you didn't. You almost screwed it up.
Well, I clicked claim locked, and then the MetaMask popped up, and I realized what I had done, and I clicked reject instead of confirm.
Yes. I unfortunately hit approve some weeks ago.
Well, I had your story in my mind.
Right, I save just saving Neil Polly. He's getting delegations in Leo. Just living a good McSpadden life.
I appreciate it. I do.
Neil McLucky.
Yeah.
I like it.
There is a. I just verified there is a broken link on the ThorChain communities page. The ThorSwap.com. I think it should be .io or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can fix that easily.
Should have known this. Let's see. Is there a big new marketing campaign, stage 2 or 3, coming up?
Yeah, a lot of the, so there was, you know, a big push, obviously, when Polycub launched. I did an interview for Bitcoin.com and Cointelegraph, CoinDesk, but, you know, a bunch of those coin crypto potato or something. You know, like there were like over 100 crypto news sites. Obviously, there's a bunch of big ones and then there's all the little ones. And we did a bunch of marketing there. Now we're looking more towards organic growth, organic marketing. And obviously there's still marketing efforts that we're making, like in terms of paid marketing. But I think what we realize is that paid marketing can be great, but you know, the real key is that organic growth and using the, you know, most crypto projects don't have any sort of community in terms of like these, if you look at similar market cap projects to Leo, you know, the whole Leoverse, they do not have any sort of community. They're like such a niche product that they might have, you know, basically their team creating stuff and they're like trying to get their first 100 users. The fact that Leo Finance has, you know, 650 monthly active users and you know, thousands of transacting wallets goes to show that we've already kind of got this initial traction, and it's unusual, but we've been able to build it because we built on Hive, which is, you know, already a social blockchain. And obviously we've been building for almost coming up on 3 years in around 2 weeks from today will be our 3 year anniversary. So we've kind of got this initial traction. We've got this huge community that we can leverage to, you know, grow and get more users. So, this is what a Nomad Soul head of business development is really focused on now, which is using the community to grow and create that organic growth. So if you've noticed, there's a lot of activity now on Twitter by the Leo ambassadors, and they're focused on, you know, reaching out to different people and telling them about Leo Finance and trying to onboard them. So that this whole ambassador program is pretty interesting because it's basically just creating, you know, it's taking like the top 20 active users on Leo Finance and telling them, and basically giving them an outline and saying, here's some structured things that you can do every day to grow Leo Finance. So if you want to know about marketing efforts, I think a lot of it is focused around what a Nomad Soul is doing. And I think he's doing a great job kind of setting up more infrastructure in terms of ongoing marketing rather than kind of like these big campaigns that blow up and then fizzle out over time. I think it's important that we have kind of like these ongoing things that, you know, if we onboard one new user every week for, you know, for Facebook, that's meaningless. For us, that's very meaningful, is to get even one new user every week. So a lot of those organic initiatives are how real network effects start to take place.
Do you still plan to incorporate SEO software? Like we had explored a content marketing optimizing thing. Any plan to do that, continue with it?
Yeah, we did. Back then we did like a small kind of subset test of that. And, you know, I still like it. I think it's a cool idea. But what I kind of realized is that most people are not going to go out and use stuff like that. And, you know, even if we have a couple people doing it, it might not have the impact to make it worthwhile. So instead what, you know, I would like to do is kind of build something into the posting framework that can help you make the content more optimized kind of autonomously. So, you know, if we could, like, just to give a small example of something I have in mind is, when you're talking about, like, let's say you're creating a post about ThorChain and you start writing, you know, about all sorts of stuff on ThorChain and you mentioned something like deterministic value. I've written a post about deterministic value like a year and a half ago or something. And it would be cool if the UI, when you're publishing your post and you write ThorChain deterministic value, the UI says suggested link to add to your post. And you like click a button and then it creates a hyperlink on that text linking back to my post. Yeah. And then, you know, it's super easy and you're making your content already more SEO optimized and you don't have to, like, you know, go to another site, use their publishing UI, copy and paste that content back over. Instead, there's just little kind of tool tips that you can click and it just automatically optimizes your content. So if you've ever used something called Grammarly, basically what it does is it's an extension on your browser, or, you know, they even have an app where when you're writing, it'll say, you know, broken sentence or something, and then you click a button and it fixes your sentence and makes it proper grammar. So essentially adding something like that onto the Leo Finance publishing UI, but doing it for these kind of little SEO optimization tweaks. You know, even something where it says like your title is too short, you know, we recommend this many characters to be optimized, or you only have three links in this post. Here's six recommended links you can add to it. To link to related content on Leo Finance. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit there. So to kind of sum up my answer, there's, we have looked into software like that, and, you know, everyone knows about some of those bigger software things that we looked into, but I think there's a lot of low hanging fruit that we can incorporate directly into the app. And that's kind of where our focus is going to be.
So fun fact, when I first got started on Steam, I actually hired writers to write stuff and ran them through Grammarly, checked for plagiarism, and then posted them online. It was not profitable.
That's because you weren't in the whale circle.
Yeah, that's true. Onboarding YouTube influencer with several thousand followers. So Short Segments wants to do this. Would like to know if anyone on Hive has a plan for mass onboarding. We are not the anybody on Hive community. We are, but I imagine FreeSpeak, you know, has some kind of plans regarding YouTube people. So let's say, you know, change this question a bit. Let's say, you know somebody who makes crypto related videos, right? And is a good match for Leo Finance. What is the pathway for somebody to help get them onto Leo Finance along with their followers?
And there's a couple ways you could go about that. You know, if the person is big enough, then potentially have them create a community page on Leo Finance. You know, you know, there's all sorts of TikTok influencers and YouTube influencers out there who talk about crypto, even Twitter influencers, and you could tell them, hey, create a community page and get your community on here. And then not only, you know, are you going to start earning, you know, a little bit of money for your content, but your community can start earning money through upvotes and comments, and it kind of supercharges your community. It almost tokenizes their community without creating their own token. And kind of gives them this increased, you know, this increased pollination in terms of they're not just interacting with each other in a social way, but they have this kind of economic machine behind them. And then obviously all their stuff is going on chain, so it can't get removed. So it could create a lot more brand loyalty for them. So I think community pages could be a cool way to onboard some of these people who have bigger communities and can, you know, like, let's just take someone like, you know, Crypto Wendy. And if she created a community page and she's got, let's just say she has a, you know, 10,000 monthly followers that, you know, actually engage with her content and comment on it and like it, you know, on Twitter and YouTube. Let's say that, you know, a fraction of those users follow her onto this community page. So she creates this page and then say like 500 people out of her 10,000 monthly people that follow her, actually join Leo Finance and start engaging with her content that she posts on that page. Things could get pretty interesting, because for us, 500 users is like doubling our user base. And for her, it might not be much, but then those 500 users could become, you know, a lot more loyal, considering that she could build a stake in Leo and start handing out upvotes to him. And now she's kind of supercharging the loyalty of her core community. And, you know, I think that's just one example of what can be done with the community pages framework. So, you know, as a team, our job is to build the framework. And then as a community and through initiatives that, you know, someone like a Nomad Soul runs, it's a community's job to kind of fulfill that vision and, you know, create content and engage with content. And then also reach out to people like Crypto Wendy and onboard them into things like that. And obviously there's thousands of influencers out there and there's thousands of crypto projects out there, and each one is a potential target.
Yeah, on her specifically. So like right now, the top featured post on Leo Finance is one of her posts. And apparently her Leo Finance profile is not on her link tree. So
I think Short Segments actually works with her. So maybe Short Segments can tell her to add it to her link tree.
Let's see. Any plans to develop a Binance style development fund to help community members with stuff? There was or is the bounties fund, but that's being paid out for Leo Voter, right?
Yeah. I think in the long run, it would be, you know, it makes sense that Leo Finance would turn into more of a DAO in terms of, you know, the community voting on what gets funded, what gets developed. At the stage we're at right now, it doesn't, I don't think it makes sense. I think we're small, nimble, basically a startup, and we can develop software and develop things very quickly. And, you know, it would make sense in the long run. But that being said, I've said this many times to people like Addicted and others where, you know, if you have an idea to build something and develop something that would benefit, you know, the Leoverse, then I have no problem helping you fund it. And yeah,
you hear that, people? Free money.
Yeah, free money. If you have a good idea and you can provably hit milestones, I would fund you along those stages. You know, there's that's always been an open offer to anyone who builds anything that benefits the Leoverse.
Right. On to Polycub. So we're getting a happening here again in a couple days, apparently.
There was, I think, in like 2 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So once that's done, we're down to 0.25. 0.25 per block. And is that low enough that we are going to hit, you know, the threshold for beginning buybacks?
No, so I don't think so. Not yet. I think we'll start the buybacks around 0.0625 per block. Okay. Just kind of roughly calculating based on, you know, what the APRs will look like. And obviously for the protocol, it makes sense to compound that treasury as long as possible. So yeah, I mean, like the Polycub WEF pool is paying out 120% APR right now still. So there's no reason to be doing buybacks to pay more yield than 120%. So, yeah.
Well, that's going to drop to 60% here in a couple hours, right?
Yep. It will.
If and or until the price of Polycup doubles.
Right. Well, and yeah, as the price of Polycup goes up, and that's part of the reason that Polycup WEF Vault has gone up so much in APR is because, you know, Ethereum has actually dropped pretty significantly against the value of Polycup. And that has caused the APR to increase because obviously Polycup being worth more than Ethereum, in terms of, you know, the ratio of them is beneficial in terms of APR. So yeah, I think we've kind of hit this interesting apex with Polycub where it bottomed out and, now it's, I mean, really everything Cub, Polycub, Leo have bottomed out and, you know, it's hard to imagine them going much lower in terms of actual market cap. You know, Polycub's just under $1 million market cap, which is incredibly low. Cub, I think, is like 500,000 in market cap, which is really low. And then, you know, Leo's around there too. And it's crazy to see the market caps that low, but the whole crypto space is kind of crumbling right now. I think what's been interesting to watch with Polycub is that as, you know, since we launched the governance, the sentiment around Polycub has really flipped. And now I think there are some people accumulating in the background and kind of trying to accumulate that governance power. And then, you know, as most people have been saying, when governance UI, because I think Neil, you said this a couple podcasts ago, as soon as that governance UI goes live, it could be, you know, kind of that catalyst event for the Polycub price when people see that the governance is something that they can interact with on the interface and kind of have those yield wars every week.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Quick
question. What'd you say in regards to the buyback? I know we are just doing an update on obviously the halving, which is coming up in the next couple of hours. And then what was that in regards to the buyback?
Yeah, so the I think it'll start happening around 0.0625 per block. It'll likely be put up to a governance vote though, when to start. So it'll say, okay, now APRs are this low. It might be time to start using the protocol and liquidity and the yield it generates, which is kind of that long-term vision, and the DAO will vote that in.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, now that governance at least is in, you know, at least is in MVP form, you know, with this happening, will the selling pressure reduce commensurately with the happening reducing supply? And then if that is true, then we might see the price of the token move up. Obviously, there's a lot of ifs in that statement, but...
Well, the key is the intersection of scarcity and utility, because you can have, as someone said this last week, I think, you can have one token, you know, you can create a cryptocurrency and give it one token. And, you know, that's obviously like ultimate scarcity. But if nobody wants that token, then, you know, it's not worth anything. So the key is not to just have scarcity, but to also have utility. Right. Because if you can have that scarcity, but then match it with some sort of utility, then, you know, that buying pressure, the buying demand has an exponential effect on the price, since right. there's not much out there to be bought. And then obviously there's not much out there to be sold either.
And really the governance is the first, you know, independent utility that
right.
Polyfa has.
Right. Well, and the funny thing is that a lot of big platforms, you know, Uniswap and others, their entire, you know, SushiSwap and platforms like that, their entire utility model is centered around governance. But a lot of these platforms don't even have functional governance. And they are, you know, multi hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars in market cap. And they have governance coming soon. And they've had that for 2 years. So it's pretty interesting to see that we've actually implemented a functional governance system, you know, even being such a low market cap project. So combine this utility with the scarcity, and I think the Polycub price starts to get pretty interesting. I don't think it's unreasonable to see a market cap for Polycub that's, you know, well over $10, $20, $30 million. I think it's more a function of how deep can that utility get. And when you look at governance, I think governance on its own is enough of a utility where people will want to control where yield goes and control kind of what happens with the protocol. I think that's plenty of demand on its own, but then you start adding things like the collateralized lending, and obviously just supercharges that. Vex Polycub, you know, I mentioned it briefly, but Vex Polycub is a really interesting kind of feature because it borrows from the V-Curve DAO system. I think Curve is one of the few platforms that has shown a successful DAO and what a successful DAO could look like. So Curve, you know, the entire value proposition of the whole Curve ecosystem comes from this DAO that they've created, where people vote on yield every week and they, you know, they essentially decide where yield goes. Ironically, with UST and Terra, there was this huge yield governance war, this battle over where yield is going and which stablecoin pools should get the most yield. And that caused a massive run in the Curve price and overall just kind of the valuation and usage of Curve as an ecosystem. So, you know, this whole yield governance system that we've built is really, I mean, the value of that in terms of market cap, I think is exponentially, it's orders of magnitude higher than what the market cap of Polycub is today. You know, for a $1 million market cap project to have a functional DAO with yield governance and, you know, collateralized lending and, you know, bonding and all these features we've built, I think it's, you know, I think it's just a matter of time for that to start to catch up in terms of real market value.
Fingers crossed. a couple of suggestions. Countdowns to the next vote on governing. Killing the airdrop page, since that's over and done with. Let's see. What is the process for people who want to create a community page? Is it still DM Cal? Or create a ticket? Or what?
Yeah, so there's actually a GitHub, and we haven't released it yet, but there's a GitHub config. Basically, there's a config file where anyone theoretically could add a community page and then create a pull request, and then we can merge it. As of right now, basically just share the details somewhere in like a ticket, and then we'll add it to the config. but potentially in the Sooniverse, you'll be able to just go to the config and edit it and then, you know, create a pull request to add a community page.
Ready.
Long term, I haven't really talked about this yet, but and part of the reason is because I don't know when we're gonna, you know, when we're gonna prioritize it, because right now it's not a priority. But long term, the idea behind community pages is to have a framework on the UI where you can actually create a page and then customize it. So you could customize the logo, you customize the colors, you customize the way the feed looks. That's kind of long term on community pages, but that's, it's on the roadmap, but it's not prioritized in terms of when we're actually going to start even working on it.
Yeah. Steve R is asking, should I open a ticket if whatever the end of that sentence is? Yes. If you have a problem, open a ticket. that's just the way it goes. Yes. What's up is now a non woo girl, but you can call her woo. So.
I will not call her woo.
You know, little tiny cowboy heads. But yeah, so that catches us up on questions for the moment. We got a couple people typing, but let's see. We are an hour in, and people have people don't know this, but people have questions about the crypto market.
Yeah, I think we should transition from the Leoverse to the Cryptoverse.
Hold on one second. So price of Bitcoin. So at the end of last week, I asked what the over under on 20 was, and Mitch and Wu both called it correctly. We are over 20, but dipped below down to 18. So solid prediction there.
I'm glad you remember what I called, because when you said Wu and Mitch called it correctly, I'm like, I don't even remember what the hell I said. Yeah, we did. We dipped hard. I'm actually jealous I wasn't able to buy some in the 17s.
I got some at 17.9.
Damn, nice. Yeah, I was telling these guys pregame before the recording kicked off that I was at a basketball tournament Saturday. And I was on my phone trying to make moves because I saw like we were Saturday afternoon, we got that big dip. So I'd bought some at 19 and then I bought more at 18.4. After that, I kind of stopped looking because I was a little busy. And yeah, it would have been nice to obviously get in even lower because we've gotten a nice bounce. I mean, if you really ticked it low enough, we got it. What would be honestly a tradable bounce? I might even have taken some profits here, but. Personally, I'm in no rush to do that because, you know, I'm just building more long-term Bitcoin, but at the same time, I'll also book some profits when they end up being really good. But, I personally didn't get in low enough where I would do that unless we see, Bitcoin, you know, tick up to maybe 24,000, 25,000 or something. But, we dipped under, we dipped under 18, and then have since rallied now and are above 20, which. We'll see if there's any follow through or if this is just a rest, so to speak, because I'm not even calling a relief rally because it's really a one candle bounce and then a little bit of upward. And, you know, the stock market was closed yesterday, which threw me for a loop. I didn't realize Juneteenth was a stock market closed holiday now.
It is now.
So I think that was good for the stock market because it gave everyone 3 days for everything to just cool off. And I haven't looked in the last hour, but when we started this call, the S&P was up a good chunk. Bitcoin's up as well. Yeah, so that's not a surprise.
Yeah, so, you know, I had forgotten that Juneteenth was now a market holiday as well. So I had put on a short on Sunday night expecting that we'd see some monkey hammer action once the markets opened Monday morning, and then it was closed, and it was like, yeah, I just kind of bounced around and it's ticking up. And then in the TradFi markets, we got a bit of a short squeeze here. So crypto has been following suit. So I do want to point out that, this is a point that we've been making repeatedly, but it bears repeating, is that Bitcoin especially, and then as a result, the rest of the crypto market, is highly tied to the stock market right now. and you can watch, you know, in real time, you can watch, you know, when the Fed came out on Wednesday, you know, with their announcement and press conference, Bitcoin was tracking exactly, you know, exaggerated, but exactly in chart pattern wise with the S&P or the NASDAQ. And so, you know, like we see that when the markets are off, the independent Bitcoin action kind of resurfaces, you know, so like people who are buying the dip, you know, they're actually creating enough buying activity to move the price around. Because, you know, from 17 to 21, I mean, yeah, you know, if you didn't have enough size, you know, maybe don't take profits, but that's a 20% move, you know? So, like for me,
distracting Neil in the chat.
Yeah. For me, you know, I'm just dollar cost averaging every day. You know, I do my morning sweeps of my poly cup and everything. And then I take some of my bag of stables that I put, you know, a chunk into Bitcoin. And, my plan is to dollar cost average over the next 6 months. So just the same, you know, roughly the same amount every day. And then, so like when we saw it dip to 17, I took tomorrow's dollar cost average and I put it in because I thought it was a good price. And, I was looking at taking profits, but then, you know, the amounts I'm doing every day are small. So it wasn't enough to really bother with. But it was a profitable trade technically. And my short got stopped out. So, you know, that's
that makes sense.
That's the other part of that though. So net probably even.
Yeah, I mean DCA is the way to go. You know, obviously, and even Saturday when I was at that basketball thing, I think one or two people, you know, talked to me about crypto, and I was just like, you know, and they're more just regular investors. So I was like, just DCA. I was like, I'm doing that. I was, you know, as well. But the difference is I'm not doing it on a set schedule. I'm doing it on set price levels. Like I basically have targets where it's like, all right, I'm buying at this price level. I'm buying at this price level, as opposed to just saying like, I'm going to put in, you know, X amount of dollars every single day, which in the end could work out probably exactly the same. When you talk about the grand scheme of, you know, dipping and forming a bottom and bouncing and, but that's just, you know, me being neurotic and needing to have a feeling of control with the price levels I see on the charts.
You know, I was thinking about doing price levels or maybe like every 1,000 points, you know, get a new handle. But then the reason I ended up not doing that though was because, well, what if I'm wrong about the eventual bottom, right?
Yes.
So, because then all that buying power would be missed.
Yes.
If it bottoms higher than what I think.
And that very well could happen to me. I'm actually hoping it happens because that means less pain and less waiting. But I honestly, you know, when it dipped even on the 18 on Saturday, I was like, oh, damn. And had I been in front of my machine, I probably would have been more aggressive because for me, really like that 18 level is, you know, 18 to 20 was definitely a buying range for me. But then under 18, I don't think I was looking to buy again until we pretty much got down to like 14. And that's based on the charts. That doesn't mean we can't see 16 and that could be the bottom. Like a bottom doesn't have to line up with a former level. Like that's the thing about price action and then even using, you know, technical charting, like it doesn't have to do anything. But you can use those things as guidelines. So you can miss out, you know, a lot. And there's a lot of people that are looking for like 13 and change, cause that would be an 80% retracement from the all time high, which is what we got in the 2018 top. Right. But it's very rare that something repeats exactly the same.
Right.
So as Wu said, just buy Bitcoin, adoption is up. Exactly. 100%. And, you know, that's not just mom and pop adoption. This is, you know, institutional adoption and, you know, it keeps growing. So buy and hold.
Or, you know, buy an LP, which is what I'm doing.
Oh, that too, which some of the Bitcoin I've bought over the last week or two, I'll probably end up LPing. I have a little over a third of the Bitcoin I own in a single stake in the single stake LP. And then I have a little bit against Rune. And the rest I'm just holding outright, which I guess is because I just, you know, have the quote unquote forever coin sitting in a wallet.
Yeah.
Everything else is punished LP'd outside of what I just bought over the last 7 days, but that'll get LP'd also.
Yeah, I think goal number one of anybody who's in this market right now should be become a whole coiner. Get one BTC if you don't have one already.
Which the number of whole coiner wallets like surged over the last like week or something. I saw a stat.
Also, Wu says also buy Leo, stop selling it below 10 cents.
Agreed.
True.
Buy Cub also. Cub is on fire sale. You'll regret not buying Cub.
Cub is on fire sale.
Come New Year 2023, you're going to regret not buying Fire Sale Cub.
I think Leoverse assets have really bottomed out. That's my personal opinion, not financial advice. But I have been buying.
And his opinion is not biased at all.
Yeah.
Well, I got one more week to get my my next tranche of Leo Miners. So then I'll be... I'll be making that passive income.
Maybe I should take some of my stables, take a little out of my out of the stable LP and use it to just buy a big chunk of Leo miners.
Well, it's hard. Liquidity is very thin.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any Leo miners, which was, you know, a mistake from back in the day when you could buy them for fractions of a penny or however cheap they were when they launched. Yep. You're buying miners or mega miners?
Single miners.
Okay.
I think all the mega miners are in Roland. And who's the one who lost his keys?
Steam Streams.
Was it Steam Streams?
Well, I think so, right?
I thought it was somebody else.
Wow. So there's a bunch of mega miners that are like forever just locked up.
Yeah.
And it's like the largest holder. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, please. I can find it on the rich list.
So wait. So if he lost his keys, he can't get his. That means he also can't access his Leo. Too?
It's another null account, basically.
Yeah. So Flipstar. Yeah.
Flipstar. That's it.
Well, apparently he's not a Flipstar when it comes to that one.
Yeah.
Won't be flipping anything. Oh my God, that sucks. Whoa. I'm not even gonna repeat that. That's funny.
Oh, that is pretty funny. I feel bad for him, but that is pretty funny.
Oh, I definitely feel bad. But
part of crypto is not your keys, not your coins, but on the flip side, your keys, your issues.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
And that is literally the tagline. When I teach people about crypto wallets, I tell them they're not your keys, not your coins. And then I reference Spider-Man because I'm just like, you're in full control. Like there's no help desk.
There's nobody to call.
There's no support. Yeah. There's no FDIC. Like, you know, so if you don't want to be in full control of your money, then fine. Be one of the common folk and let the government, you know, handle your life. If you want to have full control of your money, well, you have full responsibility as well.
Which kind of gets into the other issue of the week is all these CeFi, DeFi platforms, Celsius and BlockFi and what's the other one I'm thinking of? I don't know. But they've all been running into liquidity problems.
I didn't even know there was another CeFi. I know BlockFi and Celsius and that's it.
Well, there's a third one that rattling around in my head. So yeah, Cal just posted this tweet, SBF from FTX. Says, today we're injecting $250 million into BlockFi and partnering with them so they can navigate the market from a position of strength. Sounds nice. All great. Which means that they were about to go insolvent and liquidate everything.
Yeah.
So when you use Gemini, that was the other one, yeah.
I didn't know Gemini offered that.
Gemini had some sort of staking or something.
Okay.
So, you know, whenever you're using a platform, there's also the Solend-ish debacle that's going on right now.
Yes.
So whenever you're using one of these platforms, if you hand over your coins into a contract, into a platform, into a whatever, it's no longer in your wallet and you are subject to the market forces that you're subject to. So, you know, just be aware of that and, you know that going in and don't be surprised when things change because that's out of your control. So yeah, who says they are so weak they needed help, that kind of strength.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually use BlockFi. I use a couple different platforms, Coinbase, BlockFi, and then obviously some DeFi platforms to do some collateralized loans on Bitcoin. And I read some stuff about BlockFi and I kind of looked into their risk parameters and definitely had a moment of scare over, you know, if a platform like BlockFi went under because of loans out to companies like, you know, 3AC and others and, you know, Celsius and other platforms, you know, that could obviously go belly up for something like BlockFi. And then as a customer of BlockFi, that could, you know, zero out my account. So there is a risk and obviously I know that risk going in, but you think it might never happen. That just goes to show the importance of using like different multiple platforms, right? Like you don't diversify your assets, diversify your platforms too.
Yeah, but I mean, it should be like if they were handling their loans correctly, then they should be liquidating the customers or the borrowers, and the liquidity on the supplier side shouldn't be an issue ever.
Right.
But obviously, they're doing something, and that is not the case.
Well, this is a much broader conversation about centralized finance, CeFi versus decentralized finance, DeFi, is that these CeFi lenders treat companies like 3AC much differently than they treat the average user. So like I'm an average user on BlockFi. I have parameters on my loan that says if my loan to value ratio goes above 80%, they instantly start liquidating my Bitcoin and they never allow, it's all automated. They never allow the value of my loan. So let's say they gave me $10,000 and I deposited $20,000 worth of Bitcoin in there when Bitcoin was, you know, 40K, you know, when Bitcoin starts coming down to 20K, as soon as that ratio reaches 80%. So my Bitcoin would be worth, you know, if I have a $10,000 loan out and my Bitcoin is worth, you know, just a hair above $10,000 and I start getting to 80%, BlockFi will automatically start selling my Bitcoin to pay down the loan. It'll never let that ratio of $10,000 loan be greater than the $10,000 worth of Bitcoin. But clearly they're treating companies like 3AC much differently because they're not liquidating those positions automatically. And potentially they are, but they're at least not over collateralizing those loans. What I think happened is a lot of these platforms like BlockFi have special treatment for corporations like 3AC, where they say, okay, you can deposit, you know, $100,000 and we'll give you a loan on that, but it doesn't need to be an over collateralized loan. We'll actually give you an under collateralized loan, which is what TradFi does for a lot of different corporations. Which you know, obviously takes us to a much broader position. I think what's after this is that a lot of people are going to start turning more toward DeFi, where people are truly equal. Where, you know, I go into DeFi, and you know, Kevin O'Leary goes into DeFi, and if we both take a loan, we get the same loan. You know, we get the same loan parameters. We don't get different treatment because he's, you know, a billionaire and I'm not. I think this is just kind of enlightening everyone to the fact that a lot of these CeFi platforms treat these companies very differently. They treat them like TradFi. And you can't do that in crypto where things can go down 90% in a day.
Yeah. So like for me, I mean, everybody has their own parameters, their own tolerances. Like for me, the only thing I use CeFi for is I onboard fiat into crypto. And every once in a great while, I'll offboard or off-ramp crypto into fiat, and that's it. I don't do any collateralized anything. I don't do any trading. I don't do anything on a centralized platform. Everything is DeFi for me. But you know, that comes with, you know, a certain level of you know, technical chops that you have to have in order to do that, and, you know, just knowledge about the space and all that kind of stuff. So I get that it's harder. But for me, that's where my risk tolerance is. But then there's the sole end issue that's going on right now. So a quick summary for those of you who are you know, not following along at home. There's a lending platform on Solana. It is a DeFi platform. Apparently one user is like 80% of their deposits or something like that, and he's about to be liquidated. So they had a governance vote to take over the deposit that he has so that the liquidation won't cascade into failures, where it'll just spiral down on the price of Solana. So what do you guys think about that?
You go ahead, Mitch.
I was just going to say, I find it amusing because, and yeah, obviously take this with a grain of salt, because I know a lot of people look at the Solana ecosystem as not very decentralized, but in the end, it's still technically supposed to be a decentralized blockchain. And I feel like I see this theme more and more. And I think it might be even a problem, so to speak, with proof of stake in general. You kind of see it, you know, even with Hive and Leo, and even potentially with ETH 2.0, where we're supposed to have this decentralization, but in the end, you know, someone can still accumulate a position that makes them pretty much the big domino that can, you know, make or break something. So I kind of find it amusing that, you know, let's talk about decentralization and we're still running into somewhat similar problems almost, because instead of having a centralized authority, you just have, you know, a mega whale that can be a problem and can also dictate kind of what happens by just throwing their weight around. Similar to like, if you're playing a poker tournament, you know, and one guy's got 90% of the chips at the final table, he's dictating what's happening in, you know, in terms of the play of the game and how you, you know, essentially what your options are. He's literally dictating your play. So I just find, in terms of a broader, you know, view of it, very interesting, this dynamic that I feel like has played out within decentralization. And I don't know how that's going to maybe get better over the years or not, you know, but I'm very curious to see how it plays out over the next few years.
Yeah, I tweeted something kind of funny. I said, you know, people were saying now this is bleeding into even DeFi protocols. So a lot of people were saying kind of what I just said, where centralized finance is kind of the cause for all these issues, where they're giving those under collateralized loans. But then someone commented and said, you know, DeFi is having problems too. Look at Solend. And then I said, was Solana ever really DeFi though?
Well, like Tony's saying, Solend is its own platform on Solana. This is not the Solana blockchain saying we're taking your funds. This is a lending platform saying we are going to liquidate you in a slower, more orderly fashion rather than just throwing everything on the market.
Right. Here's the problem with that, though, is that, you know, well, first of all, I don't think Solana is a very decentralized blockchain. I think Solend just proved itself to not be a decentralized protocol. So it's a non-decentralized protocol on a non-decentralized blockchain, potentially, allegedly. I think the problem here is that DeFi is supposed to have protocol guidelines. It's not supposed to say, you know, we're going to bail out this protocol, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It's supposed to be, you know, things are built into contracts, things are automated, things are, you know, it even goes back to the basic thesis of Bitcoin, where it's got a predictable, immovable supply and inflationary dynamic. And clearly protocols like Solend aren't really following that.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, a smart contract is supposed to be immutable, right? And they're going to issue some kind of upgrade and do something. One of the problems I've had with Solana just in general is that the contracts are not published on the Explorer like they are on Ethereum chains. So you don't really know what the contract is. But even on Ethereum, some contracts are coded in such a way that they refer to other contracts and then can be upgraded, so that, you know, things can be changed on the fly by the publishers. So I mean, it's always a risk. There is no, I don't think there is any kind of foolproof way to do it. So like with Cub Finance and with Polycub, you know, there are the watchtowers from 30K where, and the time locks so that everything has like a 24-hour implementation period so that you at least have an opportunity to move things around if something happens and you don't like the way it's going. I don't know what Solen's version of that is on that, if anything, but
well, I mean, I think also irony is sometimes traditional finance or traditional borrowing might be a win. So like, you know, Cal, I don't know if, you know, you said you've done loans. I don't know if you were obviously at any time looking through loans to access fiat as opposed to maybe, you know, more crypto or, you know, crypto, you don't have to cash out because, you know, I'm connected with a lender that basically does crypto for fiat and, you know, their custodian is Morgan Stanley. So, you know, you're not worried about insolvency or them doing anything funky with your money. They're basically just a lender that's making money, you know, off of interest, like kind of like traditional lender. I think also though their loan to value is lower. I'm trying to remember. I keep thinking it's 50%, but maybe it was more. I think it was 50%. And then you didn't get a margin call until it went to like 70% loan to value. And the interest rates were lower than Celsius and all those, but that's probably because they're not leveraging your money to make money in order to be able to produce, you know, that that rate that they're offering and still, you know, turn a profit. So I actually should circle back with them and see what the rates look like now, because it's been like 2 months since I talked to them, but rates it was low.
A lot in 2 months.
Yeah, it was low. It was like three, four percent. But you know, again, 50% loan to value. Yeah. But at the same time, they're just holding your crypto in a custodian account. Like that's it. Nothing else is happening with it.
Yeah, there's two things I've used the loans for, collateralized loans against Bitcoin. One is to actually like pay living expenses. So I know someone said that about that Yabapi Matt does that, I think.
Yeah, I think he said that.
Yeah, that he uses, he collateralizes Bitcoin and lives off of the loans that he takes against it. So I've done that to pay some like living expenses, just normal day-to-day stuff. Because that lets you avoid selling your Bitcoin, obviously, and then you use the loan, and there's some tax reasons to do that. And then the other thing I've used it for is other investments. So, you know, for example, like collateralizing some Bitcoin, getting fiat in your bank account, using it to buy, you know, a piece of real estate. That's another thing I've used it for. You know, a lot of people use these collateralized loans to lever up and buy more Bitcoin, which is not something that I really like to do. But you know, that's obviously a higher risk play, but potentially higher reward. You know, if you, for example, like if you took 10 Bitcoin right now, which is like 200 grand, and collateralized it, you could potentially get like $100,000 loan, and then you could buy another $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. Now you've got $300,000 in Bitcoin exposure. On your, you know, $200,000 investment. So it's a great way to lever up. But if you start getting margin called on that, it's exponentially worse for you because you're getting margin called and that $100,000 worth of Bitcoin you bought is not worth $100,000 anymore. And that can get you into some trouble. And that's where these protocols and companies are at, where they levered up and they took that leverage and they invested it into crypto. And that puts them in like double trouble. Whereas, you know, in my example where I took a collateralized loan and bought a piece of real estate, that real estate isn't losing value because the crypto market's dropping. It's, you know, it's held its value and actually appreciated. And when I go to pay that loan back, I have now more money and then, you know, I can pay the loan back and then buy more Bitcoin. Or pay the loan back, or instead of paying the loan back, I could get the fiat out of the real estate, then put that fiat that I get in the Bitcoin now at the low price. And then I'm effectively doing the same thing where I am levering up and buying Bitcoin, but at least I'm buying it at a much better rate than if I had taken that loan, you know, 6 months ago and bought more Bitcoin at 40K, which is what a lot of these companies did, which is nuts.
Yeah. I mean, even people that were levering up at 30K, right? Because 30K held for so long. And it's like, all right, sweet. And it's like, all right, when do I get in trouble? And it's like, you know, 20K. All right, things hurt a little bit, but probably not in trouble. And then you get under 20K and you're like, well, shit, now I'm down, you know, 50%. I mean, basically almost 50% on Saturday afternoon at the low, you know, people that loaded up at 30K. At that point, yeah, you're dealing with margin calls. And it's funny, though, because if you think about it, right, the levering up is what basically explodes these runs, right?
Yep.
And if you're not part of the party, like case in point, myself, like I have not levered up once. Like I haven't used leverage. I mean, I've used some fiat debt to buy some crypto, but I haven't levered up on top of the crypto that I have. But I'm still suffering the consequences of all the people that did. So it's like they enjoyed that bull run, so to speak, and they maximized it because they're leveled up. Maybe. But yeah, their losses are huge. Assuming they wrote it down, you know, I'm sure some people sold.
Some people did, absolutely. But it's always the case with this where most people are not active traders. And even if they are, they're not good ones. So, you know, if they rode that leverage trade, they probably got burned. Like, you know, the vast majority. And then there's a small minority who made a killing. And yep. They're the ones who get on the magazine covers and say, oh, I should just do that. You know?
Yeah. But it's just funny because you have the cause and effect. I mean, literally, why are we getting such volatile, aggressive moves? Because of all the leverage that pumped everything up. And now it's like, you know, like Warren Buffett says, when the tide goes out, we'll see who's swimming naked. Yeah. Right. So that's what's happening. Like the tide's coming out and everyone that's, you know, leveraged to the till is basically the ones caught swimming naked.
Yep.
So that's essentially the catalyst for these boom bust cycles is people just using leverage.
So I called my parents on Sunday because it's Father's Day, and my mom picks up the phone and she says, okay, I'll give you to your dad in just a minute. But first, let me ask you, you know, I've seen all this stuff about Bitcoin on the news. Are you broke?
boomers.
Yeah.
They don't know about stable coins.
They don't know about stable coins.
What you know about stable coins, mom?
They don't know about.
Do you even stable coin, bro?
So yeah, I told her, I was like, no, I mean, portfolio's taking a hit for sure, but I'm fine.
I'm broker, not broke.
Like, ma, tax Sherpa, all right? Tax Sherpa.
Yeah, I'm not up as much as I was. I'm up less. So.
Yeah.
You know what? Yes, same thing. Like, and it hurt to see how much I'm up overall because it's like a third of what I was and kind of made me shake my head at my results over the last, I'll say 6 years since I got into crypto because, hey, your results are only as good as what they are today. But yeah, so I'm grateful that I am not, even though I'm bag holding, so to speak, certain things, I'm not overall negative because there's plenty of people that are down a shit ton of money, you know, that didn't start getting into even Bitcoin, let's say, until 40, 50K, and now they're down 50%.
Yeah, I a lot of people have been asking me, a lot of family and friends, you know, what are you doing now that Bitcoin's so low? What's going on with Bitcoin? Why is it so low? And the funny thing about that is like my response is, it's all perspective because to me, 20K is still super high. I mean, I was buying my first Bitcoin at like $800, $812. I remember most of my Bitcoin getting bought at like $800, $1,200. You know, back in like 2016. And so low is a relative thing. If you bought Bitcoin at $1,200, 20K is you know, still a 20X from where you bought it. So it's a lot different. But for most people, if you ask, like if you walked on the street in 2018 and asked people what Bitcoin was, I'd say 9 out of 10 people didn't know what it was. They'd never heard of it. Or maybe they, you know, and that 1 out of 10 person might have heard of it, but didn't know what it really was. They just heard it was some crazy thing, digital currency that's used for drugs on the internet. And then we've moved into this narrative where now since COVID, now everybody knows what Bitcoin is. They've all heard of it and they actually know kind of what it is. But they've all heard of it during a time when Bitcoin was like, you know, like 60K, 40K, 50K. And now they see 20K and they're like, oh my God, this is so low. So I guess the perspective is pretty funny when you look at like normies and how they look at Bitcoin. But this whole, like, you know, speaking of narratives, this whole narrative of like this liquidation crisis that's going on, where like everyone's looking at all these different protocols. People are like digging through MakerDAO vaults and stuff like that, and looking at when people are going to get liquidated, you know, what's their liquidation price. You know, there's all these like fear mongers on Twitter that are like, the 100,000 Bitcoin is going to get liquidated at $13,000 Bitcoin price. And they're all like, this is a death spiral for Bitcoin. It's going to go down kind of like Terra did, you know, to $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 per Bitcoin. You know, it's not impossible, but at the same time, you know, to me, this is a clear buy signal. It's when everyone's saying Bitcoin is dead, Bitcoin is going to zero, Bitcoin is going to $100, Bitcoin is going to $1,000. I remember it very well from 2018, where everyone was saying that altcoins were all going to go to zero. Bitcoin's the only one that's going to be left. Well, and
a lot of them did go to zero.
A lot of them did go to zero. Correct.
A lot more.
But a lot of them didn't, though. And a lot of them exploded to new highs in 2020.
I'm still waiting for a magazine cover. I want to see like a Time magazine set with the black cover with the orange tombstone. Say Bitcoin is dead.
Yeah.
That's like the absolute bottom.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to me, this is all just a part of this narrative that and the worse, you know, I think Wu posted that fear and greed index. I mean, the more fearful people get, the heavier you should buy. So the more I read people talking about liquidations and stuff, the more convinced I am that this is the time to buy. Obviously, with that said, I'm not taking all my stable coins. I'm not taking all my fiat and just dumping it right into Bitcoin all at once. I'm doing it very slowly and consistently every single day. So, you know, Bitcoin was DCA. Bitcoin was, you know, 18,000 over the weekend. I didn't say, you know, it's 18,000. It's going to go back over 20. I'm just going to dump all my fiat into it. I said, no, it's 18,000, but I'm just going to keep with the program. I'm going to buy, you know, the same amount of Bitcoin I bought yesterday. And tomorrow, if it's over 20,000, I'll buy the same amount I bought today. And just, you know, if you do that logarithmic scale chart of Bitcoin, it's very clear and obvious what happens in long time frames, but in these short time frames, it's very painful and unpredictable.
You know, well, I mean, yes, there is something to be said for long-term log charts, but one thing that I was talking about in Discord, I think last week or the week before, Bitcoin has never really existed in a real bear market.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't know how reliable those trends are. So we had the COVID crash where everything dumped and Bitcoin dumped down to 3,000 for like an hour and then, you know, pumped back up. But as far as like long sustained, like just cyclical downturn, like we are starting to see now, Bitcoin hasn't seen one of those. It was born in the 08 crash. It didn't see any real adoption until like 2012 or 2013. And so this is, I think, a new environment. And we might see some of those long-term trend lines broken. But, you know, I'm still okay with that. You know, I'm still of the view that, you know, we look back 10 years from now, Bitcoin becomes, you know, a global, maybe not a global monetary standard, but a global monetary asset that is used by, you know, everybody. And I can't help but think that the price per Bitcoin will be much higher then.
Yeah, and that is the big wild card, is what will Bitcoin do during a recession? And that's something we've been talking about for, I feel like, years now, and no one's got that answer because it's still a big mystery. Obviously, you can have, you know, a hypothesis and kind of guesstimate. And, you know, I've personally been sticking by my theory of we need a recession before we'll see Bitcoin kind of uncorrelate somewhat to the stock market, which may or may not happen. I mean, I still think initially recession is bad for Bitcoin because in the end, it's a quote unquote speculative asset. It's driven by, you know, inflows and outflows. And obviously inflows are not going to be a thing when people are struggling for money and tight on money. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when, you know, we're getting a purge of, you know, all this leverage, all this over leverage, right? Which is step one. And then when you get to a reasonable amount of leverage, right, and things have settled in, it's like, all right, well, what happens from here? You know, do we see a recession that impacts Bitcoin further because no money's coming into it? Or now that it's been cleansed, do people, you know, slowly start adding in again and slowly start adding leverage again, which obviously can push price. It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next, you know, 12 to 24 months, because, you know, there's no guarantee that we have a recession right now. Obviously, that's all over the board. There's economists that are talking about recession in 2023. There's some that are saying we're already in one. I don't know, but I'm looking forward to the other side so we have the answers.
Yeah, I've been, I'm just hoping that my 6 month plan covers the bottom. That's all.
Is that what it is? You have a 6 month DCA plan?
A 6 month DCA, daily DCA.
That's smart. I should probably just do something like that. Put it on autopilot. I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I could. Yeah. 100% could do that.
I mean, anybody could, right?
Yeah.
Just the great thing about DeFi is that you could trade with pennies if you wanted to.
Oh, so are you manually doing your DCA?
Yeah.
No, I was talking about setting up, like, obviously you got to use CeFi, but, you know, like, obviously, like, I could use Coinbase to just set up, you know, weekly buy, you know, X amount of dollars.
Yeah, you could do that.
Although
I have a bag of stables. I divided it out over like 180. I said, okay, this many dollars a day goes in.
Smart. Less to think about. Removes that decision, you know, you don't have to make a decision all the time. It's just like, just buy it. Doesn't matter what the price is.
I was thinking about scripting it so that it'll just do it automatically and I wouldn't even have to press a button. But
that gets beyond my knowledge. I'm not quite there yet. I should learn some basic scripting.
Maybe we should create a dollar cost average contract and put it in a poly code.
Maybe.
It's a good idea.
Deposit $180 worth of stable coins and it automatically divides it. Deposit, let's just say you did, for easy math, $1,800 worth of stable coins, and then it divided it by 180 and then bought every single day. And then deposited what it bought into your wallet. Could be interesting.
I mean, then you have smart contract security questions, but
right. Then you need to have a secure smart contract. But the smart contract could be very simple. I mean, it's simple and audited.
Yep. I would give it a shot.
Well, then obviously your risk also, you have less risk every single day that goes by because you get obviously part of your deposit back.
That's true. But if I wanted to put $180,000 into it, then
yeah,
sweet.
Right.
All right. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I gotta go.
Yeah.
I gotta call to prep for
that. Works. I mean, I just posted the when soon show recap. So
there you go. Cat's done. I'm out.
I'm living in the future. You guys don't know. I have a DeLorean.
You're not living in the Sooniverse. You're living in the.
I'm living in the nowiverse.
The nowiverse.
So, Cal, why don't you leave us with the next big thing coming to anything in the universe?
The next big thing. I would say what to watch out for is the rollout of several Polycub core features all at once. So we're talking about governance UI, we're talking about Vex Polycub and bonding kind of all being released at the same time. We're kind of packaging them up for a full scale release. So,
are we going to see that by next week or no?
I don't know. Sometime in this universe.
Okay. Well,
that's what they tell me. I don't know.
Give it a shot.
The Sooniverse whispers. It whispers my name.
I'm biting my tongue until all the Polycup stuff is released, and the moment it hits, my questions will start. When Cub DeFi? when these things move to Cub DeFi.
And my answer to you will be soon.
Exactly.
So next week will be the 28th. Like we started the show, 28th-ish, 11-ish, Eastern-ish. But that is our scheduled time.
We live in the Ishiverse.
Yeah. 11 a.m. Eastern on the 28th or so.
Yeah. Might be the 29th. Might be 12. Might be.
Wow. It's but usually, brunch. We're pretty good about being Tuesday. It's just a matter of what time.
Yeah.
Brunch. 11, 12. It's usually 11 or 12.
Yeah. It's always
not
brunch.
Too bad.
All right. Cool. All right, guys. So we'll see you next week.
All right.
Episode of the Weekly Wind Swing Show.
Yep. See you guys then.
Right. Peace out.